You need this?
I sure do.
Okay.
Thanks.
As is apparent from the briefing and the records here, this has been a very hotly contested matter. I want to thank, though, everybody here for their professionalism and having this day go very smoothly. And a special thanks to technical support over there. Really appreciate your assistance. Department of Transportation's mission contains a lot of different levels here, included is stewardship. But it really boils down to the mission of our department is to keep people safe on our state highways. And we strongly believe that our mission is complementary with the water boards, that they're not naturally in conflict. Here, it's important to point out that self-reporting needs and financial constraints by the regional board notwithstanding, the law is what really dictates what is the needed for proof in a case like this. The burden of proof, every element essential to a claim, the person who's trying to prove it, it's their burden of proof. That doesn't change depending on finances. In this case, as a matter of law, the prosecution has the burden of proof by a preponderance of evidence, which means there are facts that show it's more likely than not that their claims are true. There was some mention earlier, reference to statements made in settlement negotiations, asking MCM or telling MCM and Caltrans, well, if you have exculpatory evidence, you should have coughed it up, and now that's apparently being held against us. Well, the need to produce exculpatory evidence is not triggered until a claim is actually proved. Here, the department is stating and has shown here in the evidence and argument that the prosecution has not met its burden of proof on the majority of the claims. By the way, the department did submit today a revised list of admitted charges. We had inadvertently left out a couple, but you should have that in your packet today. Okay, we already went earlier, we went through the government code requirements, relevant evidence. That's which responsible peoples are accustomed to rely upon in the conduct of serious affairs. Okay, could you go to 17, please? I'd like to emphasize that today's hearing is just a mere snapshot of the department's defenses. We have thoroughly briefed our position, our case in chief, which isn't very long, our case in chief briefing. Our defense matrix are very key to understanding what our defenses are. And we urge the board members to review those documents. In addition, there were a number of objections stated, and although we're not repeating them here today, we are not waiving them by not arguing them. Number 17. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Yes. The department has an overarching objection to charges that are supported by photographs alone, and the advisory team has previously indicated that photos standing alone, inferences can be drawn, but they may not be able to substantiate a charge without any additional testimony. Nonetheless, we still have a lot of charges that are based only on photographs. You've heard the testimony that staff did not consult with the biological monitors about the actual substance of the charges, about what the photographs, why were they taken, what do they actually show. So we have questions here. Who has personal knowledge regarding what each photograph actually depicts versus what the prosecution team surmises the photo depicts? who testified with actual knowledge that the photo is a true and accurate depiction of what the prosecution says it is? And those are questions that should not be lightly skipped over. They're the real heart of the foundation of an exhibit. And without the necessary foundation, the exhibits are simply not relevant. The relevance has not been proven. Here we have a bucket of rocks. We talked about this one. I think Mr. Hungerford went over this one earlier. But just some excerpts of the prosecution's chart, as well as some testimony. The violation itself says apparent petroleum-based fluid. That in and of itself is an admission that the burden of proof has not been met. There's speculation inherent in that word apparent. Then we have Mr. Grady, who was eventually named the most knowledgeable, says he did not know what the substance was. The charges, oil leak on gravel bar. He says, I don't know what the substance is on those rocks. He doesn't know where the rocks came from. They could have come from a completely different area. Where they were collected, where the picture was taken, no. It's guesswork. It's not substantial proof. And is this evidence upon which responsible persons are accustomed to rely on? No. Okay, here we have another one. This is just a sampling of a few of the photos to give the board a flavor of what sort of questions should be asked as the evidence is combed through. All right, so there's a charge, wood waste in the river. It's number 68. What is it? What are we looking at here? What is it? Is it wood? Is it waste? What's its size, shape? Did it come from the project? Mr. Grady said he didn't know. Could it come from anywhere? And what if it were picked up before the end of the day? That seems like it would comply with Condition 11. Or even after 5 minutes, is that a violation at all? And here's the roadway again. I think we've gone through that. Testimony that a lot of different people drove on that. Mr. Grady, when asked, could that stain have even come from Dean Pratt's vehicle? He said, sure. Okay. And here's a charge, a large steel plate and cuttings. I think that, you know, we know we're looking at that straight-looking object there, large. What does that mean? What size? No knowledge is known about this. No fundamental facts have been presented about what this is, where it came from. Is it a violation? Well, ACLs, this is a very serious, sober process. This should not be an occasion to indulge in speculation and basically, as Mr. Hungerford used the term, demonize a sister state agency. Okay, and then we have another category of evidence where there's a report, and the actual language of the reports say one thing, but they are speculated, and there's indulgence in speculation as to what they really mean, and a conclusion that a violation has occurred. Here's an example. Okay, we saw this one earlier. What is this really saying? It's saying that water was pumped out of a CMP and tested for pH, and that the pH was same as the active channel. Well, that sounds pretty good. Testing was going on. pH was the same as the active channel. Somehow this becomes a violation because of a levels of assumptions that have been used. But ultimately, the person most knowledgeable says he has no evidence indicating where the water was actually pumped. The charge is that it was pumped to surface waters and isolated pool B. But that is not what the language says. Okay, so we've heard about the stormwater permit violations. There was a mischaracterization of what the NS13 BMP actually does say. It does not say watertight for the entire structure. And the department did comply with the construction general permit in that it implemented controls to reduce pollutants. To comply with the NPDES permit, there's nothing that says that everything has to be absolutely perfect or you're out of compliance. There were a number of steps taken. It was a progressive process to see what was going to work. You heard from Mr. Payne that this was waterproofing a deck to this degree was completely new and different. So different steps were taken. The learning process occurred. The NPDES permit recognizes that. You implement controls. You don't ignore a problem, but it doesn't require 100% perfection. Okay, and then we have the refueling near the RE's office. That email, the supporting email, it's based on second or third-hand comments from unidentified individuals, apparently from LAD, but we don't know. Were these people jokesters? Were they sarcastic? The person who spoke, did he even know was even out there for 2 weeks? Did he know anything? This is all involving a lot of speculation here. It's not a fact to prove a charge. We've had some concerns here with the good faith, care, and accuracy that was employed in the bringing and maintaining of charges in this case. The prosecution team brought and maintained 30 charges that were facially invalid, and we know that because they admitted it by dropping them. The problem here is that in fall, the flaws of those charges were brought to their attention, but they were not withdrawn until after MCM and Caltrans were forced to defend them and brief them. Then we had, at the eve of the March hearing, 75 new evidentiary citations were raised within days of the hearing. The initially designated most knowledgeable person had actually no knowledge about specific charges. Thousands of dollars were spent to depose him. Then there were some other errors in the ACL, a misnumbering of the permit. Those were brought to the prosecution team's attention and not corrected. Good faith, care, and accuracy. 95 charges involve prosecution assumptions about the biological monitor reports. But where are they? Why aren't they here at the hearing to testify? There's a very important portion of the evidence code that's cited here. If weaker and less satisfactory evidence is offered when it was within the power of the party to produce stronger and more satisfactory evidence, the evidence offered should be viewed with distrust. Okay, fee recovery. The department is taking the position that the fees are not legally recoverable. We've raised this argument in the law. When you're talking about particularly attorney's fees, there has to be a legal basis. And that applies here for administrative law. We have not seen any sort of legal basis for this. The enforcement policy is not a law, statute, or regulation that would authorize payment of fees. Also to note that with respect to the care accuracy of this proceeding, attorney's fees were raised for the first time in the case in chief. The amounts of staff fee breakdowns were raised for the first time in the case in chief, depriving the Caltrans and MCM from an opportunity to depose the witnesses. Last fall, we had no idea they were claiming attorney's fees. Okay, so we've gone over this previously. The crux here is that if the limitation is not distinct, then there should not be multiple violations. So, for instance, there's the leaky equipment allegations. Ultimately, what you're really trying to prohibit is oil, petroleum products on the gravel bar. You might have one incident, but the charges are, it's under 9 and it's under 13, but it's in essence the same thing. So in those cases, we think it's legally unsupportable to charge 2 and 3 different $10,000 fines. The form of a permit should not dominate over its substance, essentially. We briefed the issue about Condition 9. It's not our position that Condition 9 only doesn't apply unless it's actually raining. We made some analogies to fish and game permits that talk about imminence of rainfall, so that if something is picked up, if you get, the rain is in the forecast, you pick it up, you're okay. But if rain is not foreseeable for any time in the foreseeable future, we do not think that Section 9 does apply. So there were definitely problems early in the job. We pointed out here that the first 4 months, there were definitely challenges, but the majority of the project went through without problems. We've heard today some suggestions that there were problems, there may be enforcement actions, but there were no NOVs issued in the case after November of 2006. And you heard that the department personnel were very proactive in consulting with the board where there were gray areas. I'll note here that on January 8th of 07, Mr. Pratt came to the site, and he didn't write his report until the end of 2010 after his deposition. But nonetheless, he had a lot of good things to say about the site. This is item number 493 from the prosecution's collection of documents, in case you'd like to see it. But there's some sites there. Erosion control BMPs were adequate to very good. There was incidents where the department was asking permission to use a crane, being proactive to make sure everything was going to be all right. And here we've got a basin that's addressed in Mr. Pratt's memo. And in any event, Mr. Pratt was out there. He had nothing negative to say about the job site. Okay. In testimony, board staff testified to no actual knowledge of harm to beneficial uses, habitat damage, fish mortality. And we recognize that that does not bar liability, but it's a factor to consider. The state at this time formally objects and moves to strike Mona Doherty's testimony regarding the dead frogs. This was absolute surprise testimony, has not been previously alleged. We had no opportunity to investigate it. Okay, in the ACL, there's a section on prior history of violations. There's a number of alleged prior history of violations that really are not actual prior violations. There are some alleged violations. There's NOVs listed, but as you can see, the NOVs are not formal actions. They're not prior violations. And yes, there was a Water Code 13267 order, but the department expressly, in its response, did not admit to any violations. There's some settlement agreements that were mentioned, I believe, in the rebuttal brief, but those are not violations. Those are settlement, and there would be no incentive to settle if settlement agreements were used against agencies or contractors as priors. So here's the department's summary of accepted violations. I believe there's about a total of 20. As indicated, there were problems early on in the project, but communications improved. So the last thing I want to address is consistency in enforcement is a board policy that's in the enforcement policy. Mr. Grady testified that plank there with the arrow on it, as well as the one across the way, were unpermitted discharges. Granted, this is not a charge, but it's used just to compare. Here we've got reggae on the river. Prosecution stated in closing that it's a weekend event, and maybe that's, however, 14,000 individuals on the river stomping around could very likely cause more damage in a weekend than a project of 3 years with BMPs being actively implemented. And here's that in the same photo that was shown earlier. You can see cars very close by, no plastic under those cars. Tents in the river, people in the river, looks like temporary crossings put on, potential turbidity there.
Your time's up, by the way. In my packet, it shows that's your last slide, so if you want to just make a conclusion, that would be great.
I sure, certainly will.
Thank you.
Again, our department's mission is about keeping people safe on the roadways. And, you know, in the process of engaging in guesswork and assuming the worst about our department, the big picture, I believe, has sort of been lost in its focus. And while it's true that our department did not do everything perfectly in this site, problems that were addressed in a soberly and holistically, and we believe very proactively. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hungerford.
Thank you. again, thank you, Chairman Hales and members of the board, for your time and setting aside a whole day today for this. I think that the most emblematic testimony we received today for this whole proceeding came from Mr. Cohen, when he said that he was very frustrated by this process. His frustration is very obvious because what the regional board had done during the project and what they continue to do today is focus on just a very small part of what's happened here without considering, you know, this vast body of information here that actually shows that this was a well-done project that went according to plan, and that there's always difficulty with the project.